Okay, so I think we can probably start. So today's talk is going to be on generosity and the importance of generosity on the Buddhist path. Maybe, first of all, let me just start off by telling you how I choose these topics for these Dhamma talks, because it's very simple, really, and this is kind of a lead up to this, why I'm talking about this particular thing and why it is meaningful to me. And usually the way I choose a topic is that I would be reading maybe a particular sutta. Sutta is a discourse of the Buddha, right? Reading a particular sutta, or I would be contemplating something. Usually reading a sutta. And then when I read a sutta, something catches my eye. And I think about that. And that is how usually I choose the topic for these particular Dhamma talks. What is it that caught my eye about generosity? And what caught my eye about generosity was I was overseas recently, and I was teaching some suttas, discourse of the Buddha, where I was in Malaysia, and I was looking at the first first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. And the first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, it starts off as follows. It says that there is what is offered, there is what is given, there is what is donated. Right, that's how it starts off. First factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. There is what is given, right? It sounds kind of very plain, very ordinary. It doesn't sound like very much. There is what is given. But of course, it must be very significant, right? We're talking about the first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. And the way that the Noble Eightfold Path works, it's a causal sequence of factors starting off with right view. And then it causally, right view causally connects with all the other seven factors of the Noble Eightfold Path, all the way up to get to right meditation or deep meditation, the states of samadhi. So because there is this causal link throughout the whole of the Noble Eightfold Path, it means that the first factor has a special significance, right? Because it is with the first factor that the whole path essentially takes off. And if you don't get the first factor roughly right, it means that the rest of the path, either it isn't going to work at all, or it's going to be like stunted or diminished in one way or another. So the first factor is actually very important. And for that reason, when the Buddha says in there that there is what is given, there is what is offered, there is what is donated, it is significant, right? It's not just some kind of random, it sounds a bit random when you read it. There is what is given. Yes, of course there is what is given, but it's not random. It has a particular significance in the Buddha's teachings. And this is what caught my eye when I saw that, because it's sort of thing that you kind of read, you kind of gloss over, you kind of barely see it, because it seems so mundane, it seems so ordinary. But the point there, and this is the idea behind this, is that the whole idea with right view, which is the first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. The main idea with that is the idea of rebirth and karma, right? Especially the idea of karma, that what you do in this life, it leads to happiness and suffering in the future, one way or another. That is the context for right view. So if that is the context, then when it says that there is what is given, it is what is offered, what it means is that this is very important if you want to, in this context of karma and rebirth, in the context of making the whole path work, making the whole path progress forward towards this end, is going to be very important. That's what it means. And it's interesting because, of course, the Buddha could have taken so many different things. He could have pulled out right speech or right action. He could have pulled out compassion towards living beings and specifically mentioned that. But he doesn't mention that. What he specifically mentions is generosity, right? So generosity has a very specific and very important role at the beginning of the Buddhist path to get the whole thing moving, to get the whole thing started. That's what it means. Now, some time ago, I gave a similar kind of thing, because later on, in this idea of right view, it says there is mother and father, right? And again, the idea that there is mother and father, when you first see it, is a kind of thing you sort of skip because it doesn't really make much impact. But that is a similar kind of thing. It's also the context is rebirth and karma. And once you understand that what it means, because that is the context. Your parents are a very important field of merit. That's what it means. So if you want, again, if you want this noble eightfold path to take off, how you relate to your parents, how you relate to your mother and father is going to be crucial for the whole your whole ability to lead the spiritual life in a useful way. It's quite astonishing, isn't it, how mother and father is kind of taken out like that as something very special. It may not be obvious, but that is how the Buddha does it. And of course, I often think to myself, often you find that people don't have a good relationship with their parents, and there may be many reasons for that. But sometimes there isn't really a very good reason. Sometimes it is just that they haven't put in the effort, they haven't tried to make that relationship a good one, and that is why it doesn't work out. But once you understand that this is a fundamental aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path, then it is worthwhile going that extra mile, doing that extra thing to make sure that you do something special for your parents. And what you're doing there is, of course, first of all, you are creating happiness for your parents, but much more importantly, from your point of view, you're actually enabling the Noble Eightfold Path to work, to come out and to actually function properly. That is what you're doing there. So very important, right? How you relate to your parents is a fundamental, basic aspect of the whole practice we call the Dhamma. But so is generosity. Generosity has exactly the same thing. And it's interesting, in all the things the Buddha could have talked about, it is relation to parents and generosity are singled out as the most important ones. So that is essentially what why generosity is so important. It allows the whole path to work and to actually come to fruition eventually. So that is what caught my eye the other week. So I thought, okay, if that catches my eye, and if I feel inspired by it, then surely other people feel inspired as well. That's kind of my rationale for this kind of talks. And it's not just the Noble Eightfold Path. This is not the only place where the Buddha talks about generosity, of course. Some of the other things that I found inspiring about generosity over the years while I've been reading the discourses of the Buddha. One of the things the Buddha says, which is very, in my opinion, very beautiful. He says that if you understood the power of generosity, if you understood the spiritual power of giving, you would never have a single meal without sharing it with someone else. Right? You would never eat a single meal without sharing it with someone else. It's very, that is very profound and very powerful, right? It means that we should never forego an opportunity to do an act of kindness, to do an act of generosity. Whenever the opportunity arises, that's basically what it means. We should take the opportunity and share what we have with someone else in one way or another. That's what it means. Because every meal basically means every opportunity whenever we have the chance. That's the first thing it means. The second thing it means, of course, is that sharing a meal, sometimes it's very simple. Maybe it's just a small thing, something nice or sweet you have or something special you have. And then you share that with somebody else. A very small thing. It's not like giving a large donation. It's not like giving away something very valuable. It's a small thing. And it shows you that the point of generosity is not necessarily to give large gifts or to make massive sacrifices. It's often the small gifts in life that are the important ones. So if you do small things regularly, what are you doing? What you're doing is like you're developing a mind state where generosity is always there. It's always present in your mind. That's essentially what it is about. So just doing small acts of generosity all the time, that is what the Buddha is saying here, is the important thing here. So that is one of those other sayings that I always found very inspiring. Another one, which is about generosity, which I found very, very good as well, is where the Buddha talks about, I think, the different gradations of generosity, how you can give to different people or different groups or whatever it is. He starts off by saying that even if you just take the dishwashing water, you finish the dishwashing, and there will be maybe a few grains of rice in there, a few scraps left over food. Even if you take that and you just pour it out on the ground and you say, may this be for those little beings on the ground that live off scraps of food, like ants or whatever it is, right? Even that is merit. Even that is good karma. Even that is an act of generosity. Right? Isn't that a wonderful thing? Think about what that actually means. If that is generosity, what it means is that there is almost endless opportunities for doing acts of kindness in this world. There's almost endless opportunities, right? If just pouring out the dishwashing water is an opportunity for generosity, wow! It's astonishing. Almost anything can become generosity if that is your point of view. So what matters there is your intention, right? You see the opportunity. You see the opportunity that you have something very tiny, something very small, but you direct your attention in the right way, and reminding yourself that there is an opportunity here. And by directing your intention in the right way, you make even that into an opportunity to do something kind. And that opens up so many possibilities. And think about daily life. You go to work, right? You go to work. There's many, many different ways of going to work. Some go to work and think, oh no, not another day. I'm really fed up with this work. Other people enjoy their work. Some people just get through the day and do what they have to do. But a wonderful way of doing your work is to put an act of generosity into everything you do. Think of the customer, right? The end product. There's someone out there who will enjoy the result of what you're doing. They may never know that it is you, but there's always someone there who will enjoy that result of what you have been doing. So think of that person. Think that you, and if you do that, it's like every act you do, in a sense, in the day, at work, whatever it is, can become an act of kindness and an act of generosity to someone else. And the whole difference between not being generous and being generous, all it is just your intention and how you look at what you're doing. Same thing in family life, right? The same thing in almost any kind of situation. Why are you doing what you're doing? Are you putting that intention of generosity in there? I'm doing this to be kind, to give someone else, to do something good. Suddenly you're expanding out and you have this massive opportunity to do what is right, to fulfill basically the first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. So if you start thinking like that, you start to change your attitude, suddenly everything almost becomes a possibility of being kind, of being generous. So this is like the background for this, and this is kind of the sort of way that I think is very, very fruitful. And the Buddha says that this is the first aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path. It means it's incredibly important, right? It's not to be dismissed easily. It means that we actually have to change our view, we have to change our understanding of how we interact with the world so we can actually make the maximum use of this particular thing. It's incredibly important. And eventually, it's almost like you're on the lookout for any opportunity to be generous, right? Where can I be generous? And you're looking out and seeing if you can find that opportunity somewhere. And this is how I understand. I don't know if you are aware of this, but the Buddha often says that there should be a sense of urgency in one's practice of the spiritual path. And this is how I understand the idea of urgency. The idea of urgency doesn't mean that you should be rushing around and running around and being afraid that, you know, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. An act of urgency, rather, is this ability just to be alert and just to be aware. And whenever a possibility for being generous arises, you take it straight away. You don't wait. You don't hold back. You take it whenever it arises. And I think it is actually quite important to learn to think in that way, because very often in life it's very easy to kind of dismiss these opportunities for being kind and doing something good. I noticed in my own life, sometimes you sort of say, oh, no, this is not really worthwhile. They will think I'm silly. If I'm being kind in this case, they will think I'm really silly and stupid because it won't look right, or I will look strange if I do this in this particular case, or this is not the right time, or you're a bit skeptical because you're using your rational mind or whatever it is. But be careful of all that. Be careful of all the excuses for not doing what is kind, not doing what is generous. It's so easy to kind of rationalize these things away. And once you rationalize it away, you're actually wasting that opportunity. Sometimes it's okay to look a bit silly in other people's eyes. So what? Who cares? You're here for a much bigger purpose. The purpose is to fulfill this Noble Eightfold Path. That is what really matters, right? If other people think you're silly, it's their problem, not your problem. So be careful of the rationalizing mind, and then just step in. When you see the opportunity is there, use the opportunity. So that is the first thing. But some of these things, even though it is kind of very simple in principle what we should be doing, sometimes it's good also to have a few guidelines on how to actually do this in practice. And the first thing I want to talk about very briefly is where we should be generous. Of course, yes, we should be generous everywhere. There shouldn't be too much discrimination, and we should be kind to everyone. But still, it is useful to think a little bit about the where of generosity. And this is actually a question that was put to the Buddha. It was put by King Prasenadi of Kosala, one of the great kings in India at that time. And he was, for those of you who don't know, he was a very close disciple of the Buddha. And he went to the Buddha and he asked the question, where should I be generous? Where should I give? And the answer the Buddha gave is not, you know, you should give to the monastic community or anything like that. The answer the Buddha gave is that you should give wherever you find gladness, wherever you find that you feel confident about giving, wherever you feel inspiration, wherever you feel that your mind gets calm and peaceful, wherever you feel good about giving, that is where you should give. Isn't that a nice way of putting it? Why is that? Why is it so important to give where you feel good about it? And there's a number of reasons for that. But the first reason is simply that if you give where you feel good about it, you are learning about the power of generosity, right? When you feel good about something, you can feel that there is something about this which is incredibly useful, obviously for yourself because you feel happy, also for the recipient. So you learn about the power of generosity. This is the first reason. And of course, if you feel happy, you learn about its power, you want to do it again in the future, right? You want to continue doing this because you see how beautiful it is. And then you gain this opportunity to actually fulfill the first factor of this path. So this is the first reason. It encourages you. It gives you that feeling, yes, you know, this is actually something very worthwhile. So instead of thinking too much about where to give, just feel where it feels right. So when does it feel right? When you see somewhere where there is a need, right? You read about something. Maybe there's somebody collecting money for a worthwhile cause. You see a poor person somewhere. You feel this urge inside of you. This is where I should give. Here it is important. Here I can make a difference. Or is a work or colleague needs your help. Or just any opportunity at all. And you feel a sense of compassion, of desire to give. That is always the right time. So never say no when you feel that desire inside. That is always the right time to give. So this is then the first reason. Of course, the other reason why it is good to give when you feel gladness and happiness about it is that when you feel gladness and happiness about giving, it makes a very powerful impact on your mind. And that powerful impact on your mind is the same thing as making good karma, right? You're making something which leaves an imprint on your mind. And you will notice that when something leaves an imprint on your mind, you can think there are many things in life which leave imprints, right? Like very significant events in your life. You know, if you were, I don't know, whatever it was, very significant events in your life or very traumatic events or whatever it is, they tend to leave a very powerful impact in your mind. And you remember it for a very long time afterwards. And that is what we mean. That is part of what we mean by karma. It leaves this imprint on your mind. So to be able to kind of maximize, if you like, the karma, because you're trying to build something up here, to maximize that, if you feel gladness at the time, it is an event that is very easy to remember afterwards. So that gladness is kind of very significant and very important there. And it increases your ability to recollect and then to take the path forward, in a sense, to a new level. So these are the two reasons why this is so important. Now, one of the things I mentioned there as one of the factors that is important in this respect is the idea of confidence. You feel confident where you're giving. You feel confident that you are doing something good, right? You're doing something powerful, something that will have a result, something that actually will work. You're not just giving to a random place, but you're giving to a place where where it actually will work. Now, for many of you who are here, I know many of you are Buddhists, and many of you have been around for a long time. And I guess most of you, even if you're not perhaps Buddhist by name, you will probably incline a little bit towards Buddhism. So because of that, I'm sure many of you have a certain confidence in Buddhism, right? That the Buddhist teachings work in a certain way. And of course, if you have that confidence, it is of course good to also have some generosity towards the Buddhist institutions, like the Buddhist society here or the monasteries or whatever, because that is where you have your confidence. So how do you give to a Buddhist institution? How do you give to the Buddhist society? How do you give to Dhammasara Monastery or Bodhinyana Monastery or any other Buddhist institution in the world to actually, again, to maximize the spiritual benefit of doing that? And one, the way that the Buddha always teaches this in the discourse is he says that when you give to an institution like that, it is good not to focus on the actual individuals, but to focus on the full institution. Right? You're not giving to a particular monk or a particular nun or even a particular subgroup. What you're giving to is this whole thing we call Buddhism. That's what you're giving to. So think about that. You give a gift to the Buddhist society, and what you're actually giving, you're taking part in something very powerful. You're taking part in disseminating all these teachings that go around the world. Sometimes when you look on some of these videos at Ajahn Brahm, some of these YouTube videos, some of these teachings by Ajahn Brahm, and you see how many people watch some of these videos, it's absolutely astonishing. There's literally hundreds of thousands of people watching some of these videos. So the right way of thinking about generosity is to remember that when you support the Buddha Society, you're supporting that. You're supporting these teachings being spread around the world to all, absolutely all corners of the planet, to literally hundreds of thousands of people out there. And you have then a share in that, right? And what is it that the Buddhist teaching does? The Buddhist teaching essentially is about helping people to reduce suffering in their life and to help people achieve more contentment and happiness, right? So you have a share in that. You have a share increasing the happiness, reducing the suffering in hundreds of thousands of people around the world. Right? That's what it means. It doesn't mean anything less. And when you look at it that way, and not only now, but also for the future, because there's something very powerful about the Dhamma teaching here. The Buddha always said that when he started teaching the Dhamma, it's like setting in motion the wheel of the Dhamma. It's like a wheel that you roll out, and the wheel has a certain momentum, and it doesn't stop until that momentum comes to an end, and then it stops. It keeps on rolling here. So the idea is that when the Buddhist institutions are established, it keeps on generation after generation after generation, self-perpetuating. It's a very powerful force because people realize that there's something beautiful here. And each generation awakens to that realization, seeing there's something beautiful. And when you give a donation, when you give a hand, when you do something kind and generous, you have a part in that, right? Think, this is the way to think. This is the way to look at your generosity. It broadens out your intention. It broadens out your scope of your generosity. And you think about it in an entirely new way. This is what you're giving to. You're not giving to one place, one monk, one monastery. You're giving to this enormous, powerful wheel that is rolling through the world and giving everybody a chance to having a better life, a more easeful and happy life. This is what you're doing here. Isn't that a beautiful thought? And if you think like that, if you're able to kind of get into that mood, it gives you much more happiness, much more power as part of your practice of generosity. So this is how you practice the where of giving and how you turn your mind in such a way that it actually gives more power to that act of generosity. So this is about a little bit about the where of giving. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is the how and the when of giving. How should we give? When should we give? And one of the things the Buddha says, and again this is from the suttas, is that we should give a timely gift. It should be a timely giving. And this is just common sense, right? A timely gift means that when it is required, when it is needed. It means what is needed, right? It means, it doesn't just mean kind of giving random gifts. It means actually thinking about it. When can I give something useful? And applying your intelligence, applying your investigation to know when a gift is particularly useful. And sometimes I can see that in the monastery, people give in all sorts of ways. You see that as a monk, because as a monk, you are, in a sense, the recipient of enormous amount of generosity. Not so much as a monk, but as part of the Sangha, you are a recipient of a tremendous amount of generosity in the monastery. And it's one of the beautiful things to be a recipient of that. It's very powerful in its own right just to think about that. That's what I was saying before. When you think about all the members of the Buddhist society, you remember all the good qualities. And as a monk, you can really see that, because you see all the people always doing kind things, right? I see that all the time. And what a wonderful thing that is. But I can also see that people give in different ways, and people have different abilities to discriminate what is the right time and a good way of giving. And some people, they just come to the monastery and they have counted the number of monks. They count, okay, there are 16 monks in this monastery, but they make a standard package. And that package has a towel, it has a toothbrush, it has toothpaste, it has a bar of soap and maybe a razor, and they give that to every monk down the line, right? And they don't really ask what is required. Now, normally most monks already have a towel, right? Most monks already have these kind of requisites, because these are requisites that are quite common in the world. And very often what happens when you bring in a new towel like that, very often it usually gets stored up in the monastery, and if no monk requires it, then often it ends up being given away to some poor people somewhere, because the monks just are not able to use all the gifts that we are given. We're given far, far more than we can ever use. So that is like you just give without really thinking about it, right? That's already a very beautiful thing to do. And it's already very powerful and very, very kind, and certainly very much appreciated. But then there are other people, and they will do things like they will call the monastery and they will ask, is there anything in particular that the monastery can need, right? And just that difference in thinking about looking at what is required rather than just giving a gift at random, that already is a very powerful thing here. And the reason for that, and this is the whole point here, remember we're trying to give a sense of feeling good about what you're doing, right? So the reason for that, when you think back and you think that you have investigated properly, you think that you have given a gift at the right time that actually was required in that particular place, when you think about that, how do you feel about it? You feel much better about it, right? Because you know that you have given something very useful. You know that you have given something that is very likely to be used by those monks in that monastery, or the nuns, or whatever it is, because you have actually investigated properly beforehand. So this is one of those factors of giving. And we know it's true also in cases if there is a famine somewhere, right, somewhere far away, and then you write out a small check to that famine, you know that is the right time to give, because there is a need, right? So when there is a need, well, a timely gift is always more powerful. That makes more impact on the mind. You remember it afterwards, and you get more happiness and joy out of that kind of gift. And to give you an example of that, there is a very nice story found in the Discourses of the Buddha. And this is a story which is found in a sutta, in a discourse called the Gatikara Sutta. It's in the Majjhima Nikaya. For those of you who actually like to read the suttas, I recommend everyone to read the suttas. Suttas are very, very beautiful and very powerful. And this is a story from there, right? So if this story inspires you, then get hold of the suttas and start reading here. So this is the Gatikara Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya number 81. And this is the story under a previous Buddha known as Buddha Kassapa. And Buddha Kassapa, he had a disciple known as Gatikara. And Gatikara was this incredibly virtuous and beautiful human being who did everything just perfectly the right way. He was very, very highly spiritually attained, of course. At the same time, he was a very poor man. He was a potter. He made pots for a living, and he didn't really have all that much to be able to offer to the Buddha. But whatever he had, he would always share it. And on one occasion during the rainy season, in the rainy season, India is a time where the rain is very, very heavy. You have the monsoon rain, right? It just pours down, buckets basically. And the hut the Buddha was staying in at that time was leaking. So the Buddha says to some of the monks, go to Gatikara the potter and take the root, take the thatch, take the grass off the roof of his house, and then you can use that. You can use that here on this kirti here. So that's what they do. The monks go to Gatikara. He's a very poor potter. He has two old parents living in that house, right? Two blind parents living in the house. And the monks go and they take all the straw, all the grass off the roof of the house of Gatikara the potter. So there's no roof anymore. They didn't have any ceilings. So now you could see straight out into space, right? Or you could see the sky above you. And then after they have removed all the thatch and they then have used it for the Buddha Kassapa's house, Gatikara the potter, he comes back home and he sees all the thatch has gone off his house. And most people, and then he asks his parents and he says, what happened? What's going on? And his parents says that, well, it was the monks that came to collect the straw for the Buddha Kassapa. Now, if that happened to you, if you got back home and all the tiles have been taken off your roof, how would you feel? Most people would jump up and down. What? You can't do that. This is my house. You can't just take all the roofing off my house. If it rains, I'm going to get wet. All the animals will come in. This is terrible. And most people will get incredibly upset if that happened. For good reasons. I have to admit, for pretty good reasons. But, of course, the interesting thing here is Gatikara's reaction, right? What Gatikara's reaction is, what a wonderful thing, yeah? What a gain for me, that the Buddha Kassapa has so much confidence in me that he knows that he can just come to my house and he can take all the grass off my house. What a boon that is for me that this is happening. That is how he reacted. And then it says in that sutta that because of that act of generosity, because of that thing, he felt happiness and joy for a full fortnight afterwards, and his parents felt happiness and joy for a week. So isn't that a beautiful thing? Isn't that a marvelous thing? And that is like a timely gift, right? There was a need for fixing up the roof of the Buddha Kassapa. And obviously what happened here, it's not actually said in the sutta, but obviously what happened here was that Gatikara, he had made an offer to the Buddha Kassapa. And this is the kind of offer you see in the monastic discipline. He had made an offer saying that if you ever need anything, please go to my house and take whatever you like. That is the kind of offer he had made. And this is the kind of offer as a monastic, you can actually see in the monastic discipline, is the kind of offering we can make to each other. If a fellow monk, if you're in a very good relationship with a fellow monk, you can say that. If there's ever anything of mine that you need, please feel free and go and take it. I must admit, I've never seen it actually happen in practice. Sometimes it's a bit difficult, but certainly individual items you can see that thing happening, right? And what a beautiful thing that is. And then that is such a wonderful attitude, right? This attitude that you feel the sense of trust, the sense of power of giving to a Buddha, of giving to someone who is really worthwhile. So that is the timely gift when it's done to the utmost. And this, of course, is a very, very high standard of giving, but it's very inspiring at the same time. At least that's how I feel about that. So that is the first thing. The second way that the Buddha talks about how we should give, we should give gifts respectfully. We should give gifts with our own hands, right? Sometimes, if you are the giver, it's very easy to despise the person you are giving to. Sometimes you feel that, I am the one who has the money. These are the people who receive from me. This is just a poor beggar in the street or a poor person in some faraway country. I've got the money. Okay, here you are, but, off with you or whatever. And that's not very nice, right? And it's like not really having respect, not really seeing the humanity of that person, but seeing instead the difference, thinking that you are superior and they are inferior, and therefore you despise that person. And that is not the right way of giving. Generosity should come from a sense of respecting the other person, respecting them as a human being, reminding yourself that I too have probably in the past, maybe in the past life, been in a similar position, right? I too in the future would be in a similar position when I will be poor and I will depend on the generosity of the people around me. And when you remember that we're all basically in the same boat. We're all human beings. Life always fluctuates. It goes up and down. You never know where you're going to be next. When you remember that, you can respect anybody. It doesn't matter who they are. Even an animal you can respect. And then you give a gift. You give it carefully. You give it respectfully. You give it with kindness and compassion in your heart, rather than giving it with a kind of looking down upon that being or that person. You give it with your own hand, right? A similar kind of thing. Giving with your own hand is giving respectfully. Instead of doing it through an intermediary, you give directly yourself. It's much more powerful when you give it directly, because you are there, right there, when the act happens itself. You have more of a feeling for the generosity when you are there, rather than when you do it through an intermediary, through an agency, or through another person. You give what is good. You give something of good quality, rather than giving something that you want to just to discard and throw out in the rubbish anyway. And again, you can see here why all of this is important. If you have given something while despising the person you are giving to, how would you feel about that afterwards? It's not, the memory isn't all that nice anymore, right? Because there was that despising there. So the memory isn't that nice. Or if you give something that was going to be discarded, again, the memory is not powerful. It's not something that is very beautiful. But if you have given respectfully, if you have given in the right way, out of kindness and compassion, something that was good with your own hands, well, then it becomes something beautiful. And then, when you remember it, it becomes again a power in your mind, something that you can use in your meditation practice or whatever. So this is the purpose of all this. It's all because it makes more impact on you. It has more power in your mind to do the spiritual work that it's supposed to do, and then push you forward on the spiritual path. So this is all about the same thing. And to give you an example of this, maybe again, sometimes in the monastery in Serpentine, one of the wonderful things in our monastery is the kind of care and compassion that we often have for each other. It's very nice. I mean, you might think that we live in an all-male community, right? And this actually is all-male community where everybody cares for one another, which is very, very nice. I know it's the same thing in the nuns' monastery, but sometimes people are not so surprised that kind of women look after each other. But actually, it works equally well in the male community. And sometimes when I go down, I go down to get my washing from the washing machine. One of the other monks, one of the other lay people, has already taken it out and hung it up on the line for me, right? Isn't that a beautiful thing? And sometimes when I go down there and I see someone's washing in the washing machine, I take it out and I hang it up on the line for them. And it feels so good when you see that, when you come down there and somebody has cared for your clothes and they put it up on the line for you in a nice and neat and beautiful way. And it's all ready for you to be collected and nice and dry, right? There's a very beautiful feeling about that. It creates a very nice community with a sense of care and compassion between everyone. And I don't make a distinction if it is the clothes of one of the anagarikas, one of the lay people living in the monastery which is there, that too I will take out and put up. I don't look down upon someone just because they are a lay person or anagarika. They get exactly the same treatment as everyone else. And that creates a beautiful sense in the monastery where everybody cares and looks after each other. And this is the feeling you get in the world when we treat each other with this kind of kindness and this kind of generosity and compassion. Okay, so that is the idea of giving respectfully and giving timely. And then there's the idea of giving often. You know, this is what I was saying at the beginning. Every time you have a meal, you're supposed to give, right? You don't just give one big gift to kind of get it out of the way. Okay, I'm going to write out one big check, then I don't have to worry about giving for the next 6 months or whatever. But that's not really the idea. The idea is to have a mind state where you kind of always have this state of mind where you're willing to give and you're willing to share, right? So it's a regular thing that you should do as often as possible. And it's not the size so much. It's nice to give sizable donation as well, but that is not really the main issue. The main issue is even tiny, tiny acts of generosity done frequently have all this power. So giving often is another thing, another aspect of this path. But now I want to talk more about the really powerful, even more powerful reasons or how to give. And the Buddha says that one of the most powerful ways of giving is to give with the idea that may this be for my joy and happiness in the future. Right? Not because it's good karma, not because so that you can have a good big car in your next life or a big house in your next life. That is not so useful. But may it just be something that is a beautiful, creates happiness and joy for me in the future. And more specifically, the Buddha said, is the highest kind of giving, the highest kind of intention, is where your intention is, I'm giving this, this gift, may the result of that be, may this be a requisite for my mind, an ornament for my mind. This is the highest kind of giving. Right? What does it mean that a gift is a requisite for your mind? What it means is that you understand the power of generosity on the Buddhist path. You understand that this is one of the factors, right? This is one of the requisites that actually make the whole path move along in a very smooth way. It becomes a requisite for your meditation. Because when you meditate, that act of generosity will have an impact to enable you to actually go into a deep state of meditation. Without that happiness that comes from generosity, that comes from the goodness of our lives, meditation, deep meditation, becomes impossible. So there's a requisite. It's something required to actually move to that. Right? That is the highest kind of generosity. May it just be a requisite for my meditation practice. May it be a requisite for my insight. It's the same kind of thing. To be able to have deep insight, you need both the happiness in the mind and the stillness of the mind, which comes from the same source. So again, it is a requisite of the mind. So think like that. I do this simply so I can attain the happiness that is required for me to move forward on this Buddhist path. It is an ornament. It makes my mind beautiful. I just feel purity inside. And there is a requisite that enables you to actually achieve the meditation practice that is required for moving forward on this path. So when you sit down like tonight, like we did the meditation just before, sometimes it's hard to become peaceful, right? And I know many of you that you come probably pretty much straight from work or from having maybe you had a dinner beforehand, and many of you are probably tired. But the more acts of generosity you have done beforehand, the more purity you have in your heart, the more ability you will have to practice meditation, even on this half an hour before the talk on a Friday night, even that much. So this is what it's about, and this is how it kind of leads you in the right direction. And for this reason, the Buddha also says that the way to give is to give in such a way that you feel happiness and joy before the act of giving. Just the thought of the act of giving gives you happiness and joy. While you give, you feel happiness and joy. And after you have given, you feel happiness and joy, right? That there is that joy all the way throughout. And again, the reason why that is so powerful is because it makes an impact on your mind. If you feel a lot of happiness and joy while you do an act, that will leave a lasting impact on you. You won't forget it very easily. When you have happiness and joy in the moment, you will also have mindfulness, right? A happy moment is usually a mindful moment. You will be present because you feel good. If you have mindfulness and joy, these are precisely the factors that lead this event to have a very powerful impact on your mind, because you are there, you're present, you're taking it in, and then it will have a very powerful impact later on when you recollect that afterwards. And a beautiful example of this from the suttas is the example of Lady Visakha. You may have heard of Lady Visakha, the Buddha's often called his chief female lay disciple, or at least he was one of the most important female lay disciples of the Buddha. And one day she goes to the Buddha and she says to the Buddha, Venerable Sir, I would like a special boon, a special kind of allowance from you. I would like to be allowed to give to all the sick monastics in the monastery. I would like to offer them a meal. I would like to offer a meal to all those people who attend on the sick monastics. I would like to offer a meal to all the monks and nuns who are going to depart and go away. And I would like to offer a meal to all those who have just arrived in the monastery. Can I please have this special allowance to do that? And then the Buddha says, well, you know, usually I don't give special allowances to people. You know, everybody should have the equal opportunity to give to the monastics in this way. But then she says, she explains to him, she says, well, you know, if I have this allowance, if I'm able to give in this way to these monastics, and the point is here that these monastics, it's sometimes difficult for them to get the food, right? Because they're about to travel, they are ill, they can't go on the ordinary alms rounds. So it's difficult for them to get food. So she knows that she's providing a timely gift, as I was talking about before. So she says, when I give this, then because of that, I will feel a sense of joy inside. And when I feel a sense of joy inside, I will have a sense of rapture as a consequence. Rapture is just a greater degree of joy. When I have a rapture in my mind, I will feel tranquility inside. That tranquility will lead to even more profound sense of happiness. And that happiness is what will take my mind into samadhi. Samadhi, the deep states of meditation. And then the Buddha says, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It's wonderful, it is well. You have really understood the Dhamma, the purpose of generosity. You can have this allowance to give to these people who are sick and etc. in this way. This is the whole point, right? She had understood the power of generosity, what it actually does. And this is why all of us here should also practice generosity in the same way. This is the purpose at the end of the day. Why we do generosity. When you recollect it, when you recall these things, it brings happiness in the mind. And this whole path takes off like this. It's an automatic path. You don't have to do very much. If you have done enough goodness in your life, enough kindness, and avoiding all the bad things, this happens as a matter of course. There's no intention even required. There's no will required. It's an automatic path of meditation. Consequence of one simple thing. And that simple thing is, you recall your generosity. You remember all the good things you have been doing. That's all there is to it. Isn't that kind of amazing? This is what the path is like, right? This is the purpose of this path. This is how it works. There's something very powerful and beautiful behind that. And to give you an idea, this is another simile which I have told you before, which I find so beautiful and which always inspired me so much when I was reading the suttas, the word of the Buddha. It's not so much when you do the recollection of your generosity, it's not so much that you have to sit down and think, I did this, I did that, okay, I did this, you know. If you become too calculating in that way, try too hard to remember things, then often it doesn't work. The way it works is more according to the following simile. The Buddha says that a good person, someone who is really good, really virtuous, really kind, really generous, when they come home in the evening after a long day's work, after a long day doing all kinds of things, and then they sit down or they lie down to rest because they're tired after a long day, then it is almost as if all those good actions they have done throughout their lives is as if they get flooded, they get kind of enveloped, it's like an immersion in all of those good acts they have done. They can't escape from those good acts. They come back to them. Because you're resting, you're allowing the mind to fall to peace as you're lying there, all those good acts, they come back to you. And he said, it's exactly the same way as in the evening. In the evening when the sun goes down behind the mountain. Now if there is a house in front of that mountain, then when the sun goes down behind the mountain, the shadow will completely envelop, will completely surround and completely encase that house, and there's no part of that house which will not be enveloped by the shadow of that huge mountain. It is exactly the same thing with us. If we want our generosity to really take off, we should make a mountain of generous acts, right? Make a massive, massive mountain. So when you eventually, when you go back in the evening, when you lie down, whenever you have time to take a rest and really relax, then you relax. And you can feel that mountain of kindness, the mountain of goodness, the mountain of not doing what is bad, coming back to you, enveloping you, penetrating through your whole body and mind. There's no part of you which isn't immersed in all that beautiful conduct of the past, right? There's nothing really you have to do. All you have to do is just be peaceful and it comes back to you. That is the beautiful simile of the Buddha, the simile of the shadow of the mountain. And this is what we're doing. And when that happens, when you do that, you know, we often think about meditation as something that we have to do, as something that we have to, put force into, put willpower into. But there's no force in this at all. All you do is sit back and you feel all the goodness. Then you start to feel happy. When you start to feel happy, you become very peaceful. Your body becomes very tranquil. You don't feel any agitation or restlessness at all. You feel very, very peaceful and beautiful. When that peace comes into you, you feel even greater happiness, right? Because it's very beautiful to have no restlessness and to have no agitation. And the kind of happiness that kind of builds up like this, stage by stage, at a certain point, you may want to watch the breath or do metta if you want. But the whole thing builds up and builds up. And as the happiness becomes very powerful, your mind gets drawn into the present moment. Why won't you be in the present moment if the present moment is beautiful? You don't have any choice anymore. You will automatically be in the present moment. You get pulled into the present. Mindfulness becomes very powerful. And then meditation also becomes very beautiful. And then you get drawn to the object you're looking at. And everything happens as a matter of course. This is ultimately why we do this practice of generosity. That will aid the whole spiritual path. And now you can see why I was talking at the very beginning. I was saying that the Noble Eightfold Path starts off with right view. And one of the foundation factors of that right view is that generosity is so important. And now you can see how that generosity propels and drives the whole eight factors of the Noble Eightfold Path until it takes you to the eighth factor, Samma Samadhi, right meditation, right concentration. Right there you have it. The whole thing works in this way here. So, that is all about the power of generosity. So please reflect on this. And please take the opportunities in your life. Start looking for the opportunities for being kind, for being generous, for doing things for the people around you. And once you start looking, there are so many opportunities in daily life, all the time. Don't make any excuses. Don't think you will look stupid. Don't think this isn't the right time. Don't think whatever. It's always the right time, right? Remember what is really important in life. And if you can do that, you will grow spiritually so much faster because it is the foundation of the Noble Eightfold Path. Okay, so thank you very much. That's my talk for this evening here. Okay, so are there any questions anyone would like to ask? Peter, yeah. Okay, microphone coming here. Yeah.
I was taking a walk in the city the other night, and I was walking pretty quickly, and I just ducked into a shopping centre, and I could immediately see there was a lady holding her debit card. She couldn't pay for her shopping.
Okay.
So I just remembered what Ajahn Brahm taught me and what he learned from the Buddha. And I had the money in my pocket, and I just walked straight up and paid. I didn't hesitate, and I just walked out of there. And I could hear her running after me, and she wanted my phone number, so I gave it to her. And she called me later. I missed it, and then I called her back, and she said, "You seem like the sort of person that it would be good to know." And she gave me another phone number, which is the number of a beautiful girl, and we're still talking, so...
Okay.
That's all.
Yeah. Okay, that's a nice story, isn't it? Yeah, so that's... yeah. So if you want... the idea here is that if you want a nice girlfriend, a nice boyfriend, this might be one of the pathways to having a nice girlfriend or girlfriend, right? Okay. Good. Okay, that's great. That's inspiring. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else want to say anything here? Anybody has any comments or questions or anything you want to say? At the back there. Eddie. Okay, Eddie. Yeah. Eddie's always good for it. Thank you. Thanks. Yes, Eddie.
Ajahn Brahmali.
Yeah.
Don't you think we can also link, you know, the power of generosity to nirvana?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because
yeah.
the Buddha, yeah. he was saying, yeah. nirvana is the annihilation of greed, hatred, and delusion.
Yeah.
Okay? So if we take greed, okay,
yeah.
the antidote to greed is generosity.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the antidote to hatred is loving kindness.
Yeah.
And the antidote to delusion is right thought.
Yeah.
So if you practice generosity,
yeah,
loving kindness, and having right thought, okay, this will lead to happiness, peace, end of suffering, nirvana.
Yeah. Yeah.
So nirvana is very possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That is true. It is. It kind of, you're doing the right thing. You are reducing your greed. You're reducing your desires by generosity, and that I think is one of the very important aspects of generosity that you are doing. Particularly, that's precisely. And the more you can see that your happiness actually comes from giving rather than from holding on or clinging to your possessions, the more easy it is to let go. Right. This is one of the wonderful things about that. It is one of the other sayings by the Buddha. He says that what the miser fears will happen to him, that is exactly what happens to him because he is miserly. So a miser is fearful of not having enough, right? He's always afraid of, if he gives away, he might need that thing later on. So he's afraid that he will not have enough in the future. That's why the miser holds back. But precisely because he is miserly, that will happen to him in the future regardless. So what the miser fears is what he actually is actually what he gets. So by doing the opposite, by seeing the power of generosity, you're actually seeing that you're learning that giving is actually so powerful. But also remember that giving cannot actually take you all the way to Nibbana all on its own, right? The reason why giving can take you to Nibbana is because it takes you on this beautiful path, which leads via deep meditation, via right samadhi. And because it leads you via the right types of samadhi, that's why it also takes you to the deep insights, which actually can take you to Nibbana. Ultimately, you're going to need those insights and deep meditation as well here. But still, you have a point there. Here.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else want to say anything here? Any hands going up? Everybody happy here? Yeah? Yeah. Okay. So let's take some questions from overseas then. So we have a few questions. Actually, one of them is actually not from overseas. They're from Australia. This is from Cassie in Australia. And it says here, can generosity counteract fearful thoughts? And I think the answer to that is definitely yes. I think that is certainly the case, that you can counteract the fearful thoughts. Simply because, and fear is a fear of the future, right? It's a fear of what will happen in the future. And one of the reasons why you have that fear of the future is also because you don't have a very beautiful mind in the present moment. If you're able to build up a beautiful present moment, if you're able to feel very happy now, you tend also to have a positive view about the future. The reason why you are a bit afraid of the future is because something isn't perhaps quite right about the present moment. The more right the present moment is, the better view you normally also will tend to have about the future. So definitely, I would say that it can counteract that. The whole spiritual path, in fact, all the generosity, all the kindness, all the morality that you do, all the meditation that you do, all of these things together will tend to counteract any fear. And certainly, the fear of not having enough that I was just talking about, I was replying to Eddie over there, that also will be counteracted because you, when you give, you see that true happiness, much more important happiness than the happiness of owning things, actually comes from the giving itself. Okay, so that was question number one from Cassie in Australia. Second one is from Dira Yupa in Thailand. When lay people are generous towards monastics, do monastics have to feel obliged to try not to upset those lay people? What is a skillful way to draw between showing gratitude and having to please the lay people? Okay, so I don't think as a monastic that you have any kind of duty to please the lay people as such. I think your duty as a monastic is to live the monastic path well. And if lay people have a good understanding of Buddhism, they will appreciate that that is what a monastic is supposed to be doing. And they won't get upset if the monastic is living in the right way. So the primary obligation for a monastic is to follow, at the very least, the discipline, the code of conduct that is required of monastic. That's the first thing here. The second thing is to practice the path to the best of their abilities. And if they do that, then they are really fulfilling their part of the bargain, so to speak. And I think often if that happens, then often people will also feel inspired, right? Particularly when they see a monastic who has kindness, who has wisdom, who has all these qualities of the heart are already there. They will feel inspired by that, and then they will give regardless. And then lay people shouldn't really, I don't think you should necessarily seek for a kind of personal relationship with monastics, because that kind of personal relationship is a thing that you often have in family life, right? Where there's a mutual sense of bonding and a certain degree of attachment. That attachment shouldn't really have that same attachment between neither among monastics nor really between monastics and lay people, because that kind of attachment is really the opposite of the path that you're trying to tread as a monastic. And if there's too much trying to please the lay people, that kind of attachment can perhaps start to arise. So really all the monastics should do is to practice in the right way. And I know that in Thailand, that is what most lay people look for. They don't really look for the monastics trying to please the lay people. They're actually looking for monastics who are practicing well. And that is why you find that there's so much generosity in Thailand. Go towards those monastics who practice in the forest, who practice meditation, right? That is very often where the generosity goes. It doesn't go so much to the city monks, even if they are the sweetest and the most kind monks in the world. Still, people have a sense that it is in the forest where the real meditation practice happens. So I think that people understand that, and I don't think monastics should fall for that thing of trying to please lay people too much. If you do that, you are missing out on the point of the monastic path. So what is the skillful way to draw between showing gratitude and having to please the lay people? Well, you show your gratitude just by being kind, right? By being considerate, by doing the right thing, not by being, you know, by doing what is right, essentially. That's how you do it. You show your gratitude by coming occasionally to Dhamma Loka and giving a Dhamma talk, right? That's one way to show your gratitude, etc., etc. So this is how you do it. And you have a mutual relationship which works. It's kind of Dhamma relationship where everyone kind of grows together in this way. Okay. And of course you're saying, how much are they obliged not to try to upset those lay people? And that is interesting. Is it okay sometimes to upset people? To what extent is it okay to upset someone? And one of the things that you find that sometimes the teaching of the Buddha is quite profound, right? And sometimes if you tell people, well, this is what the Buddha taught, if they're not used enough to the Buddhist ideas, if they're not used enough to think in a Buddhist way, they can get really, really upset, right? And really angry. What do you mean? The Buddha couldn't have said that. That is unreasonable. That's impossible, right? But the point is that sometimes people need to be a little bit upset. I mean, sometimes I've seen that in my own life. I get upset sometimes when I see something which I can't really understand. But then instead of actually allowing that upset to carry me away and to become completely foolish, I say, wait a minute, let me just wait a minute and think about this carefully. And usually what I find is that those teachings that the Buddha taught that are very profound and difficult to understand, they actually make sense. If you just give it enough time and you allow your mind and you kind of allow your reason to think about it in a reasonable way, it actually makes sense, even though they can be upsetting initially. So I think a monastic shouldn't be too afraid of upsetting people, at least not occasionally, if it is done with a pure heart, with the right intention of guiding them in the right way. I'm sure some of the things I said tonight may have upset someone, right? I'm sure this is just the nature of things. You always say something which upsets somebody. That's just the way things are. So upsetting someone should not be the primary motive when you give a talk. The primary motive should be to give some Dhamma, some real Buddhist teachings. That should be the primary motive. Okay, next one. This is from Malta. Okay, hello. This is from Christine from Malta. So, it is wonderful that the Dhamma is even have Dhamma on Malta, isn't it? That's excellent. That's really great. That's wonderful to hear from you. And you are asking, are there instances when too much generosity is an act of stupidity rather than virtue? Perhaps it can be. It really depends on your mind state, right? It depends on what your intention are. So you have to look at your mind. Now, if you are, for example, allowing yourself to be bullied, or you're allowing yourself to be manipulated by other people, and you give because of manipulation, or because you are afraid, or because you are, or whatever reason, if that is why you give, because of all these negative things, then sometimes it can be too much. You know, if some kind of fraudster, you know, you get all the scams on the internet now, and you give $10,000 to someone who is doing a fraudulent thing for you, or whatever it is, then of course then it is a bad thing. So you have to look at your intention. Why are you doing something? And the ideal way of giving, it should come from a pure state of mind. No fear, right? No anger, no desire. Just this purity of intention, whereby you want to improve your mental state so as to actually move yourself forward on the spiritual path. If you can do that, then you're doing something very beautiful and worthwhile. So remember, intention is always at the root of everything. It is intention which really decides whether anything is good or bad. With the right intention, you can never go really wrong. That is what it's all about. Okay, everybody happy? Any last questions? Everybody good? Okay, so let's pay respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.
Sipati panna.